Monday the 8th of March, Kof Beis Adar, Rabbi Zev Lev Shlita, the purpose of the Mishkan.
I want to explain to you a very difficult Gemara. The Gemara says that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan and the Kelim of the Mishkan, so that was the order that he told him to do it. Moshe Rabbeinu went, and when he commanded Bezalel to build the Mishkan, he changed the order. And he told him first to build the Kelim of the Mishkan, the Aron, the Kelim, the various vessels of the Mishkan, and then to build the superstructure of the Mishkan itself. Bezalel said, can't be. Lo kach min hago shel olam. That's not the way the world lives. You don't build your furniture and then build the house around it. First you build your house and then you put the furniture inside. Because if I build the furniture first, if I build the kelim first, kelim shani osa lehechan achnisim, we're going to put them. Moshe said, you know what? You're right. The Rabbanu shel olam taka told me to build the Mishkan first and then the kelim. Bitzel kel ha'yisa v'yodata. You were in the shadow of God and you knew. That's why he's called Bezalel, Bezalel Kill. Very difficult Gemara. First of all, what did Moshe Rabbeinu think? Did he make a mistake? Moshe Rabbeinu thought the Rabbanu Shem told him to build the Kelim and then the Mishkan and Bezalel had to correct him? That's an impossible possibility. And if that's the case, then who knows how many other mistakes Moshe Rabbeinu made that he wasn't caught. Chas v'shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't make any mistakes. So what did he do? He tried to trick Bezalel. We find that a Rebbe is allowed even to say sometimes things, we find Gemaras like that. The Rambam brings it down also. A Rebbe is allowed to tease his Talmidim to see, to get them, keep them on their feet. Keep them on their guard. That they should. The Rebbe could say something that even is not 100%, and the Talmud should catch him. But that's impossible to say by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the Moser HaTorah. Couldn't say something wrong to Bezalel, hoping that he'd catch. So, which was it? Either he made a mistake or he did it on purpose. Neither one is possible. And secondly, says that Bezalel was Bezalel Kel Vayisa. You were in the shadow of God. The word sale always signifies a doubt. Not something clear. Or is clear. Borer kashemish. Silo shel safek. So, lechora, if Moshe Rabbeinu wanted to tell Bezalel, yeah, you knew clearly what I didn't know, he should have called him Orkel, not Bezalel. Shouldn't have been in the shadow of God, he should have been the light of God. So why is he called Bezalel? Why is it Bezalel? It seems to be the opposite connotation. In order to understand this, I want to start with something else, and believe me, that by the end we will come back and understand this Gemara. It says that the Aron was made in such a way that it was tocho kebaral. It was gold on the inside and gold on the outside, and it's a symbol that a Talmud Chacham should be tocho kebaral, that his inside and his outside should be the same. Now, if you think about the way that Chazal phrased this, which comes first? The inside or the outside? Tocho, his inside, should be kibaro like his outside. That seems to imply that first comes the outside. And then you try to make the inside fit the outside. Now, on the surface, doesn't make sense. Because we know that the pnimius, the inside, is the ikr. A Talmud Chacham, the ikr, should be on the inside, perfect. And then he should make sure that he acts on the outside the same way. But first comes the outside. The chitzonius, how he acts on the outside comes first, and then comes the inside. The answer is yes. I once had a woman in my kehillah in Miami many years ago, and she was brought up in a more in Eretz Yisrael they call it dati light, you know, more. Ephraim, but, you know, don't take it too seriously. You know, kashrus, if it said kosher, is fine. If it didn't say kosher, there was a K somewhere on the label. Even if it was in the word craft, it was good enough. That was kosher. Shabbos, as long as you didn't drive, you didn't answer the phone, you didn't turn on lights, you're Shomer Shabbos. More than that, don't confuse me with all these details. And so on. And it's sometimes harder for a person who's brought up like that to improve their Yiddishkeit than a Baal Tshuva who comes from nothing and accepts to become a Frumma Yid. So it's easier for that Baal Tshuva sometimes than a person who's brought up thinking that this is the right way. Very difficult to improve. But this woman had her first child, and she decided that she's going to become much more serious about her Shmiras HaMitzvahs, and she convinced her husband also that that's what's proper, and now they're parents, they have to make a good example to their child. And she started first with kashrus. They turned over the house, and they kashered the house, and they only brought in products with good hechsherim, and this took about a year to really establish. It wasn't something overnight. And then they started working on Shabbos, and they started learning Hilchas Shabbos, and they started keeping Shabbos much more seriously. And finally, after about 2 years of this, I called her in one day, and I said, look, Baruch Hashem, you improved your Shmiras HaMitzvahs and Shabbos and Kashrus to a very, very fine level. But I think the next level is already you're capable of doing the next thing which may be difficult for you, and that is tznius. Dressing properly. In Miami, except for the Klei Kodesh, the Rabbonim's wives, the Mechanchim's wives, the women did not dress halachically modestly. And in Miami, it was possible to think that if you got dressed at all, it was tzonua. Didn't bother too many people. So I told her, I think that you should start dressing tzonua. And she said, Rabbi, I'll tell you, I don't feel yet like a Rebbetzin. And I don't want to dress like a Rebbetzin because I don't want to be a hypocrite. Since only the Rebbetzins dress like that, if I'll dress like that, people think I'm also a Rebbetzin. And I don't feel like that inside. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I said, sounds very nice, but I'll tell you what you can be compared to. Imagine somebody comes to shul on Simchas Torah, and he says, I don't really feel happy. If I get up and dance, people are going to think that I'm happy, and I'm not happy. I'm a hypocrite. So I'm going to sit here and contemplate being happy. And as soon as I'm happy, I'm going to get up and dance. The guy will sit there till Tisha B'Av. How do you get happy? You dance. As the Chinuch says, Hachitzonios Ma'orim is apnimim. What you do on the outside has an effect and it gets the inside going. Motions create emotions. That's the whole Torah. The whole Torah is going through the motions, doing external things that hopefully if you want to get there, you talk shalom l'shma, bo l'shma. That's not hypocrisy. Hypocrisy is not, I want to get there, I want to have those feelings, I want to be like that. The way to do it is to go through the motions. Do it. You're never going to feel tzanua if you dress not tzanua. If you start dressing tzanua, you'll feel tzanua. You're never going to get happy if you don't dance. Dance. So therefore, the external has to come first. You first have to go through the motions, and the motions lead to emotions. So therefore the Torah, the Rabbanan said, Tocho Kibarim. The Aram was gold on the inside, gold on the outside, which symbolizes that the inside eventually should be like the outside. But you have to start with the outside. Very nice. There's only one problem. The Torah doesn't say that. When the Torah describes how the Aram was covered with gold, it mentions the inside first. It says, V'tzipiso so zahav tahar. You should cover it with pure gold, mibayis umichutz titzapenu, from the inside and on the outside. So the Torah mentions the inside first and then the outside, yet the Rabbanan turned it around and they said, tocho kibaro, first comes the outside and then make the inside like the outside. So I understand why the Rabbanan said what they said, but they didn't describe what the Torah says. Why did the Torah say the opposite? The answer, I think, is that we didn't explain what the Torah says properly. Torah says like this, that she pisa oso zahav tahar. If it would only have said that, like it says by the other kelim, what would I say? Where do you put the gold? You should cover it with gold on the outside. Now we thought that the Torah now is telling me how to cover it with gold, and now it's more specific on the inside and the outside. No. The Torah said first cover it with gold on the outside. Then mibayis. Then cover it on the inside. And then bachutz, and then again on the outside. So where was this three coverings? Outside, inside, outside. The answer is very simple. Rashi says, how did they cover the aron with gold? They made three boxes. Tzal made a medium-sized box of wood, a larger box of gold, and a smaller box of gold. First, he put the medium-sized box of wood inside the bigger box of gold. Now it was covered on the outside with gold. Then he put the little box of gold inside the wood. Now it was covered on the inside with gold. Outside, inside. What's missing? The rim. If you look down, you see a sandwich. So now you had to cover the outside of the rim with gold. So it's outside, inside, and again outside. So now we have to know what the symbolism is on the second outside. So I understand, first you have to go through the motions. The outside has to be gold. And after you build up your external motions, mitok shalolishma, bolishma, it comes into the inside. You want to be happy. So you dance, even though you're not happy yet. You dance. You get happy. Now what happens? So I would think, okay, now I'm happy with the Torah. I don't need to dance anymore. Now I can sit down and just feel happy. Not true. Now you have to continue dancing. Now it has to go on the outside again. Right? There's a Ramban in his explanation to the Aseres Hadibros. It's a separate work of the Ramban. It's not part of his Perush al Torah. The Sfasemis quotes him a lot. This Ramban. The Ramban says on the Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, Mato'iru u'mato'oru es ha'ava ad she'techpot. Says the Ramban, if a person has a tremendous feeling of love or fear for the Ribono Shel Olam, tremendous emotion, don't leave it floating in the air, ethereal. Ad she'techpot, put it into a chefetz, put it into something concrete. Dress it in something physical, because then it's real. Ad shetechpot. So, person starts going through the motions, external. Then he reaches tremendous levels of internal emotion that are really l'shem shamayim, simcha and ava and yira, that all come from going through the motions. Now that he has them, he has to continue to express them in a physical way. Because putting them into something physical makes them more real. So I would think that that's in this world. In this world, we live in a physical world. So what's real to us is the physical world. So just having feelings of love or fear or simcha, whatever they may be, in this world, they have to be put into some kind of physical framework to be real. But the Moshe Cordovero says that it's not only in this world, but that is the ideal. That's the ideal. How so? He says the neshamas in Gan Eden look forward to Tchias HaMesim, like we look forward to Moshiach. Just like we look forward to Yemos HaMoshiach, that'll be the ideal environment of this world. The ideal environment for the neshama is not to be a neshama separated from a body. But the ideal is the neshama in the body itself. Because what the neshama can express in a physical way is greater than what it can express just spiritually. So it's not just because we happen to be in this world. And that explains a very difficult Ramban. There's a fundamental machlokus between the Rambam and the Ramban, and the Ramban of what Tchias HaMeshim in Olam Haba is. Everybody agrees that there's an Olam Haba and a Tchias HaMeshim. The question is, what's the order and what is the last stage of history? The Rambam learns that this world, we know what it is. After this world comes Olam Haba. It's not because it doesn't exist now. It exists. It just comes after a person leaves this world. And it existed before the person was came into this world. Olam Haba, according to the Rambam, is a spiritual world for souls. It's a soul world. What we call Gan Eden, Gehenna. The place where the souls are, where neshamas are, before they come into this world. And after they leave this world, that's called Olam Haba. There'll be a time of Trias HaMesid, where the neshamas who that went already into Olam Haba will come back into a body. And then they will graduate from that body again, and the final stage will be Olam Haba, that Olam HaNeshamos, the world of souls. So the ultimate stage of history, which is forever, is a totally spiritual world. That's what the Rambam holds. And Trias HaMesim is a period of time somewhere between when a person dies, comes back, and then goes back into Olam Haba, Lenetzach Netzachim. The Ramban argues. And the Ramban says that Trias HaMesim and Olam Haba are the same thing. Olam Haba is a world that doesn't exist now. The Ramban also agrees there's a world that exists now, a world for souls, but that's not called Olam Haba. That's Olam HaNeshamos, that's Gan Eden, that's Gehenna, that's not Olam Haba. Olam Haba is a new world, doesn't exist now. It's a world that will be created, recreated, renewed, to fit a neshama and a body that is eternal. And the final stage of history is eternally physical, body and soul. They ask on the Ramban, how could that be? According to the Ramban, Olam Haba, Trias HaNeshim, is the soul and the body together. The Gemara says openly, Olam Haba is Ein Bo Lo Achila, Bo Lo Shtia, there's no eating, there's no drinking, it doesn't seem to be a physical world. Like the Rambam says, it's a spiritual world. Says the Ramban, no. Doesn't mean that it won't be a physical world. It just means there won't be any reason to eat or drink. Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai for 40 days and 40 nights, didn't eat and drink. He was still a physical being, he had a body. But his body didn't need to eat and drink. The body was taken care of by the neshama. So in Olam Haba, Trias HaMesim, there'll be a body, but it won't be necessary for the body to eat and drink. So they ask, okay, fine, so we need a body for it. If the body doesn't have any of the functions of the body, so what do you need a body for? Just be a soul. The answer is what we said. In this world, the body has two functions. It first creates the wherewithal for neshama to be able to exist in this world. You need to have the physical to create the spiritual, like a candle to create the flame. And then, once you have the spiritual, you express it through the body, which is a higher level, expressing spiritual things in a very concrete physical way. In the world to come, the neshama will take care of the body, will make the body exist. You won't need the body to make the neshama exist. You don't need that first stage. But you'll still need the body to express the neshama. The neshama will express itself through the body. That, yes, will still exist. That's important. So we have basically an understanding of how this world works and how even the next world works. You have to first go through the motions physically to create the spiritual emotions. And once you have them, you have to then use the physical to express those spiritual emotions in a concrete way. What was the purpose of the Mishkan? Before the Chet HaEgel, before there was a sin of the golden calf, the Torah says, "Bechol hamakom asher azkir eshmi avo elecha uvirachticha." You didn't need any physical place to arouse you to God's presence. God's presence was so imminent everywhere that you could feel God's presence everywhere. The Torah says. So what did you need a Mishkan for? What did you need a Mikdash for? You don't have to come somewhere to be aroused and inspired to feel God's presence. You could feel that anywhere. The purpose of the Mishkan before the sin of the golden calf was that once you had these tremendous feelings of God's presence, of love and fear, you came to the Mishkan and you used the kelim of the Mishkan to express those feelings. Just like Olam Haba, Trias HaMesim. You don't need the body to bring about the soul. You need the body to express what the soul already has. That would have been the purpose of the Mishkan before the sin of the golden calf. You don't need the Mishkan to arouse you to God's presence. You need the Mishkan to be able to express your feelings for God's presence in a very materialistic way. After the sin of the golden calf, that wasn't the case. After the sin of the golden calf, right, you needed the Mishkan first to arouse you to feeling God's presence. You couldn't feel it everywhere. And then, once you had those feelings, you used the kelim of the Mishkan to express them. When God told Moshe Rabbeinu to build the Mishkan, it was before the sin of the golden calf. But God knew there was going to be a sin of the golden calf. But he didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to know, because the Meshech Chochma says that what God knows doesn't affect our free choice. It's a miracle. God knows, and still we have free choice. But what people know does affect free choice. And therefore the Rabban Shalom somehow had to obscure what he told Moshe Rabbeinu, that he shouldn't have a hint that there's going to be a sin. If God would have told Moshe Rabbeinu, I want you to build the Mishkan and then the Kelim, Moshe would have said, what do we need a Mishkan before the Kelim? You don't need a Mishkan to arouse you to God's presence. It's everywhere. Moshe would have said, you know what? Something's going to change. That feeling's not going to exist. There must going to be a sin. And Moshe couldn't know there's a sin. So God, on purpose, clouded what he said to Moshe Rabbeinu, put it in a shade, in a cloud, obscured it, and Moshe Rabbeinu was meant to understand first the Kelim, then the Mishkan. That's the order before the sin of the golden calf. But that's not really what God said. God said it in such a way that Moshe Rabbeinu would think that's what he meant. But what he really meant is first the Mishkan, then the Kelim, because God knew there was going to be a sin of the golden calf. But he didn't want Moshe Rabbeinu to know. When Moshe told Bezalel the mitzvah, it was after the sin of the golden calf. So Moshe told him what he understood the Rabban Shalom meant to begin with. First the Kelim, then the Mishkan. Bezalel said, Lo kach min hago shalolam, that's not the way the world is now. God couldn't have meant that, because God knew there was going to be a sin of the golden calf. Now we're after the sin of the golden calf. And now we first need the Mishkan to arouse us to those feelings, and then we need the Kelim to express them. Must be that what God told you to begin with, he obscured. And he made you think that this is the way it was. But he put you into a shade. He made it not clear. But he really meant first the Mishkan, then the Kelim. And that's what Moshe said. But Sail Kel Hoyisa Miyodata, you understood that shade. You understood that obscurity that the Rabban Shalom put me into. And therefore, what's it called? You understood what the order of the Mishkan really is going to be after the sin of the golden calf. First the Mishkan, then the Kelim, and not what it was going to be before the sin of the golden calf. First the Kelim, then the Mishkan. With this, I want to answer another question. In last week's Sedra Kisisa, the Torah speaks about the Mishkan, and then it speaks about Shabbos. In this week's Sedra, the order is the opposite. First it speaks about Shabbos, then it speaks about the Mishkan. The rabbis learn from this week's Sedra that since it says Shabbos first, and then the Mishkan, that building the Mishkan does not supersede Shabbos, and you can't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. But that would seem to imply that if we only had last week's Sedra, the opposite would be true. That building the Mishkan would supersede Shabbos. First comes the Mishkan, then only Shabbos comes later, and you'd be allowed to build the Mishkan on Shabbos. So which is it? I want to say like this. There's a Meshech Chochma similar to this idea, but not exactly. But the way we explained it now, it comes out very, very nicely. Before the sin of the golden calf, last week's Sedra, what was presented before the sin of the golden calf. What was the purpose of the Mishkan? Not to give you a feeling of God's presence. That you got everywhere. It was to serve that presence and manifest it through the Kelim of the Mishkan. That's Docha Shabbos. We make Karbonos on Shabbos. Right? We light the fire on the altar. We make sacrifices. Why? Because why isn't the building of the Mishkan Docha Shabbos? Because Shabbos makes me feel God's presence. I don't need a Mishkan to make me feel God's presence on Shabbos, because then it would seem to imply Shabbos is not enough. Like we don't put on Tefillin. Tefillin makes me feel connected to God. Why do I need Tefillin on Shabbos? Shabbos makes me feel connected to God. So therefore, Tefillin we don't put on Shabbos. We don't build the Mishkan on Shabbos. You don't need it. It would detract from the oaths of Shabbos. But to serve the Shechinah, that you do on Shabbos too. To create the feeling of a closeness to God, that you don't need on Shabbos. Once you have that feeling to serve it, that you do on Shabbos too. Before the Chet HaEgel, the purpose of the Mishkan was not to feel God's presence. It was to serve His presence in a physical way. That's Docha Shabbos. Therefore you can build the Mishkan on Shabbos before the Chet HaEgel. But after the Chet HaEgel, the purpose of the Mishkan was to feel God's presence. That you don't need on Shabbos. Then the Binyan HaMishkan is not Docha Shabbos anymore. So had it been before the sin of the golden calf, then it's reflected in Kisisa. First comes the Mishkan, then Shabbos. The building of the Mishkan takes precedence over Shabbos. But this week's Seder is after the sin of the golden calf. Then you need the Mishkan to feel God's presence, to create an environment where you feel that presence of the Ribbono Shel Olam. That can't be Docha Shabbos. Shabbos takes care of, you don't need a Mishkan to be able to take care of the same thing. That's why the order is changed from Kisisa to Vayakil. It's only 3 minutes, I'll tell you something else. That answers, the Gemara explains it. Since he spoke about Tocho Kibaro, the inside and the outside, the Das Akenemi Bali Atosis asks a question. If that's the symbolism of the Aron, that a Talmud Chacham should be on the inside and the outside the same, wouldn't it have been better if the Aron was solid gold? Wow, a solid gold Talmud Chacham. Not just a Talmud Chacham with a gold on the inside, gold on the outside. Solid gold. He gives a very practical answer. He says, yeah, it would have been better if the Talmud Chacham was solid gold. The Aron would have been solid gold. Would have been a much better symbolism. But it would have been too heavy to carry. A box that size, solid gold, you couldn't have carried. He said, even though miracles happen, and the Aron carried the people who carried it, ain't some Kralanesh. He has to be able to be carried naturally. That's a Das Akenim. Let me tell you how I used this Das Akenim many years ago. Had a girl in my Kehila who was a Balas Tshuva. She was about 16 years old. She had only a mother, and the mother knew nothing about Yiddishkeit, but the girl became frum, and the mother did everything for this girl. She didn't understand a word about Judaism, but she kashered the house, and she kept Shabbos in the house for the daughter, and she bought the daughter a whole new wardrobe of clothing, whatever the girl wanted, and she accommodated her. Very good mother, a tzaddikis. She wasn't frum to nothing, but this mother was a tzaddikis. But the mother didn't know any of it. The girl came home, she said, we have to do this, we have to do that. And the mother didn't know, is it really true or not? And sometimes the things sounded really wild. So one time the mother came to me, and she said, Rabbi, aren't you an Orthodox rabbi? I said, yeah. She said, then why don't you eat kosher? So I knew something was coming. What happened was, in those times in Miami, there was one glatt kosher butcher shop that the entire community, frum community, bought from. And it had the hashgach of all the rabbonim, the vara rabbonim. Except there were some rabbonim, chassidish rabbonim, that the source of that meat was 100% glatt, 100% okay halachically, but it wasn't chassidish shechita. So they wanted a hider of chassidish shechita. Chassidish shechita, for instance, the shochet has to have a beard. He could be Moshe Rabbeinu. He doesn't have a beard. It's what's it called? They don't use this. Not halacha, it's a hider. So they wanted chassidish shechita. But they couldn't get that for the whole community. So what they did is a small group of people got together, and they brought, and some of the rabbanim gave the hashgach on this butcher shop, but for themselves they wanted something different. So they brought in meat, the chassidish shechita, twice a year they brought it in. You had to buy a whole 4 quarters of an animal at a time. You had to have a special freezer to store the meat. It cost about 3 times as much as the regular meat, and you had to pick it up at a central pickup place, which was about 15 miles, 30 miles round trip to pick it up, outside of Miami. So what happened? This girl came home, she found out about this, and she kosher we can't buy anymore in the butcher shop. It's not kosher. But the only meat that's kosher, we have to go 30 miles to pick up, spend three times the amount, and we have to get a freezer. So my wife said, understand, the rabbi buys his meat there. Isn't he an Orthodox rabbi? How come he doesn't eat kosher? Only you have to eat kosher. So I said, I'll take care of your daughter. I called her in, and I said to her the following. I said, you want to be solid gold, right? You want to be mahadir and have meat from Hasidish Shechita. I said, very, matovu manoy. If you would be married, and you had to spend the money, and you had to make the trip, and you had to buy the freezer, great. Kol hakavod. But you're not married. You're living with your mother. Your mother has to pay the money. Your mother has to make the trip. Your mother has to buy the freezer. Maybe, if being solid gold makes you a little bit too hard to be carried by the people who have to carry you, maybe it's better not to be solid gold. It's very good to be machmir and to be mahadir, but that's when you're carrying yourself. But if somebody else has to carry you, then maybe it's good to be a little bit of wood and less gold, right? Because be too heavy for the people to carry you. I think it's a tremendous lesson. It's good to be machmir, it's good to be mahadir. On whose cheshbon? If it's on somebody else's cheshbon, then maybe the hider is to be easier to be carried and not to be solid gold.